League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Baytown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blankers. I'm Branham. Austin Rodriguez filling in for Brian McDonald today. It's a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's a getaway edition of the Killer Bees. A three-day weekend. Three-day weekend because there's lazy bones in this office that don't want to work on Monday. Can you believe that?
Everybody is blaming Granato and Lance.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. They said that they didn't want to work, so everybody follows suit. That's what Dell said.
That's a convenient excuse. I wanted to work. Shows you who gets pull around here. Brian's being lazy bones the last 3 days. He hasn't been with us the last 3 days, but that's good. We have Austin Rodriguez, who's wearing his Rice hat. Lance Berkman stepped down today. Did you see that?
No, really? Yeah, at HCU?
He stepped down. He's no longer the head coach at HCU. Maybe I'm in a good mood because it is a forced three-day weekend here at ESPN 97.5. I know the Astros haven't been a good baseball team this year. Now, they're in fine spot. Like, they're not terribly positioned. 4.5 games back in the AL West. 4.5 games back of the final wild card. So, 4.5 games back of a playoff spot in two different races. Even though they're 22 and 28 through 50 games this year. So, maybe it's that they're in a good spot in the playoff races. Maybe it's because of the forced three-day weekend. But I was feeling optimistic today. And I started wondering, what is everybody's favorite part of this Astros team so far? 713-780-ESPN. What is your favorite part of this Astros team so far? What is it for you, Blankers? What's your favorite part of this 22-28 Houston Astro team?
So I guess my favorite would be, I would start with the fact that Jake Meyers doesn't suck. Because I was so critical of him and I was done with him and I thought that there was no reason for anybody to say he's their starting center fielder. And to see him not only kind of find it a little bit, but to find it at the level that he's found it, playing the way he's playing, I think that's one of the brightest spots in this entire first 50 games of the season. I think that the fact that he's, you know, again, an above-average defensive center fielder, but more so than that to me and more importantly to me is offensively, he's not an automatic out or close to it. He's not a guy that you just pencil in as a guy that's not going to do a whole lot at the plate. And when he's hitting for average and it has some pop, I think that's fantastic.
I think there's actually a lot of things that could classify as someone's favorite part of the Astros, more than you would expect from a team who's 22 and 28, I think. Austin, I don't really know a whole lot about you, if I'm being completely honest. You seem like a heck of a guy. I admire your work ethic. You always do a good job when you're running the board here with us and other shows. Are you an Astro fan, Austin Rodriguez? Are you one that pulls for the Astros? Because I know that you're like a Phoenix Coyote fan.
Right.
Is that are they Phoenix or Arizona?
Phoenix Coyotes, isn't it?
I have no idea.
It was Arizona.
Arizona, so it was Arizona. So you're an Arizona fan. You're a Rice fan. You're a Cavs fan?
Cavaliers fan.
How? Why are you a Cavs fan?
I started following the Browns in eighth grade or so, and then just kind of adopted all the Cleveland teams.
Did you grow up in Houston? Where'd you grow up?
League City.
League City, and you're a Cleveland fan. Anyways, who's your baseball team?
I fluctuate between the Diamondbacks and the Guardians. It really depends on the mood.
This is the strangest thing I've heard. So yeah. I'm not going to ask you, Austin, what is your favorite thing about the 22 and 28 Astros? Maybe we can talk about the Guardians sometime. My favorite thing, there's a lot. Like, it's hard for me to pinpoint one specific thing. Like, the Ronel Blanco thing is really cool. Like, Ronel Blanco going from this guy who you probably didn't think was going to be in the starting rotation if everybody was healthy, and he's turned into, like, one of the better pitchers in the American League. Now, we'll see how much of that continues. kind of wink, wink on that. But that's been really fun on the pitching side of things. Probably my favorite story on the pitching side of things. Okay. And then on the offensive side of things, I think there's three things you can point at. And one of them is what you mentioned, Jake Meyers. Is he turning into an everyday center fielder right before our eyes? Hopefully. Like, if Jake Meyers continues his pace after 50 games, not only is he an everyday center fielder, he's one of the top 10 center fielders in all of baseball. If you have a north of a 300 average, he does right now, north of a 900 OPS, he does right now, and you're playing really good defensive level center field, then you're a top 10 center fielder in baseball. Can he sustain this? You know, I don't know if he can do this, but I think he can be an everyday center field guy. So Jake Meyers has been an incredible story. That has been really, really fun. Kyle Tucker has matured into one of the best, if not the best, hitters in all of baseball. Number two in OPS behind only Shohei Ohtani. Leads baseball in home runs. Leads the American League in OPS. Pretty sure he still leads the American League in on-base percentage and slugging. So he has emerged into this MVP level, maybe the best hitter in the American League. So that would be my second one. And the third one's Jeremy Pena. Jeremy Pena taking the best of his rookie year, the best of his sophomore year, morphing them together, combining the best of year one and the best of year two, and he's turning into one of the better shortstops in all of baseball. So to me, it's those four things. Ronel Blanco on the pitching side of things, Jeremy Pena, Jake Meyers, and Kyle Tucker on the offensive side of things.
So I didn't know if we were going to go back and forth or not. So I start with Jake Meyers. I would say then to counter, because I agree with what you've said, but I would say from the pitching standpoint to me, it's the guys that have stepped up that we didn't expect to see much and get much from. It's Scott. It's Martinez. It's the guys that were supposed to be mop-up guys and guys that aren't going to be in high-leverage situations that really are just kind of, hey, thanks for being here. Do your job, because this one's over one way or another. To guys that you've relied on, to guys that you've put there in positions where they had to get guys out and come in some pretty high-leverage spots you didn't expect and do their jobs. And I think that that's been a huge positive for this team because of the fact that we didn't know what to expect and we were kind of doubtful of what there was in the middle of that bullpen.
Yeah, the middle of the bullpen's been pretty strong. Like, it's the bullpen has killed you at times this year, but the guys who have killed you have either been the fringe guys that should have never been here. Like, Blair Henley wasn't even in the bullpen, but, you know, that kills your overall team ERA. Who else got hit early? Like, the Ortega guy. They brought up Coleman. Forrest Whitley pitched, two-thirds of an inning. So, like, the fringe guys killed you. But now that you've been able to, like, settle it, Taylor Scott's been good, Seth Martinez has been good, and the guys that are still currently with you that have killed you is actually the big three. Like, yep. Abreu at times has killed you. Presley, more times than Abreu, has killed you. Josh Hader at times has killed you. There was that stat where the Astros had blew, like, eight saves in their first 20 losses or whatever it was. So, like, you knew that the bullpen was going to be suspect. It's just the guys that were suspect was kind of random and kind of odd. 713-780-ESPN, your favorite part of the Astros season to date. 50 games in. We always talk about Memorial Day being like the day that you look at, you start talking about these sort of things too. And because Lazy Bones here at the station, no one's working. Today is the day to talk about that. I asked the Twitch, and it's always a dangerous thing to ask the Twitch what they think, what their favorite things are so far. Virginia says that his favorite thing was Julia Morales calling the game. That way you had, you know, the all-women broadcast booth. That was really cool to see if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, it you know, whenever there's a first, it's something that's worth notating. I think for what it's worth, I thought Julia was better.
Oh, sure.
And Julia doesn't do it as a regular full-time job, so it's fun. I'm telling you, I'll never understand the in-season series is off for broadcasters.
Yeah,
like, you have, depending on what season, what sport you're doing, you have months off from doing that sport. I don't understand the company, and I believe that the Shin, which is a spinoff of what they used to do when they were AT&T Sportsnet, have this requirement that you have to take time off during the season. It's always bizarre to me.
We have Todd Callis on today in 20 minutes at 3:30. Are you going to bring this up to him coming off of his series off?
We could.
I want you to.
I will.
I want you to.
I have no problem doing it.
713-780-ESPN. A few others on the Twitch. Twitch, favorite things that have happened. Kugblaze says Abreu kicked off the team is also my favorite thing. I'm with you there, Kugblaze. Go Cougs. The issue is that he's coming back. He's coming back relatively soon. There's no definitive date. We just have the latest information. Dana Brown said potentially the end of the weekend, early next week. He's going to be playing with Sugarland today. Mm-hmm. Jose Urquidy starts that game. I think, like, I posted this question on Twitter as well. A lot of people mentioned Jose Abreu getting sent down to West Palm Beach.
Was a good thing.
Was a good thing. Like, they were so sick of Jose Abreu that him getting erased off the roster was their favorite thing that has happened this year.
So, essentially, he could be a guy that could be part of the good thing and the bad thing from everybody this year. Because the good thing is that he got sent down. Yep. And the bad thing is that he hasn't done jack since he got here, except for a small sample size at the end of last season.
It would be that, yeah. Like, you could easily be the best thing that's happened so far, being sent to West Palm Beach. And he could, I mean, I would say he is the worst thing. He was on pace to be the worst everyday position player in big league history. Mm-hmm. In big league history. And the only reason he's not going to be is because he's probably not going to have the enough at bats to qualify to be the, or enough at bats to accrue enough negative WAR points to be the worst player in baseball history.
Yeah, I think that one of the other positives for me too that I have to mention, just because I didn't know what to expect and because I'm pulling for him, because he actually sat in with us when we were at the Space Cowboys game. I'm glad that Joey Loperfido has stepped up when he got his call. I'm glad that he isn't just a boom or bust guy. It was really encouraging to see of a farm system that has been criticized and things like that, that Joey Loperfido has proven. We see these 4A players we talk about and things like that. So far, he's proven he belongs on the major league level.
Yeah, he does. I'm just worried that he's not going to be here early next week.
Yeah, I understand that. But I'm saying because, you know, Chaz got hurt before he got hurt, and around it, he hasn't been great. He hasn't been what he was a year ago. To say that Jake has been great, to you also have to give your flowers to guys like Dubon and now Loperfido, guys that allowed you to kind of keep the outfield afloat with better-than-average players playing baseball as opposed to the guys playing the corner infield for you.
Loperfido, I'm with you. I agree with you. I was thinking more along the lines of, like, what is Loperfido's ceiling, to kind of, you know, alter the conversation a little bit. Like, I think he's an everyday player.
I do too.
Like, I think he's maybe not an all-star. Like, we haven't seen enough to really get that grasp, was not a top 100 prospect. And I know he hasn't played a ton. But what we know of Loperfido coming through the minors and what we've seen in a very, very, very small sample size in his career, I would feel comfortable if he was an everyday player for the Astros.
I would too. I think, you know, he's Corey Jolks was the guy that you were questioning whether he could be an everyday player. I think that he's better than Corey Jolks. I'm trying to think of a comp to where, to your point, he's probably not an all-star caliber player, but he's a solid everyday player that can give you 3 to 5 years, probably at least, of good play, both offensively and defensively. From a salary standpoint, it scares me off. But I'm thinking about guys. Who's Benintendi?
What do you mean?
Could he be close to a Benintendi?
I don't feel like their game's very similar. Benintendi had a lot of power in college, but then he kind of changed who he was offensively.
Yeah.
And he kind of turned more into a contact guy, didn't hit for much power.
Yeah. But Joey's supposed to be a power hitter, but he hasn't hit for power either.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm just expecting it to come. Like, I don't think that Loperfido is going to turn into Andrew Benintendi and not hit for any power. I still expect Loperfido. If Loperfido, like, becomes a full-time player in 2 to 3 to 4 years, and he's getting everyday at-bats for, like, a span of 3 years, mm-hmm. I think Loperfido is going to be like a 30 home run guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope that's true. I think if Loperfido gets 550 plate appearances in 2 to 3 years, that he's going to hit 30 home runs, flirt with 30 home runs. Yeah. Okay. Alex is asking us, is Joey going to be Tucker's replacement? I think there's a pretty good chance of that. Yes. Mm. I think there's a pretty good chance that Loperfido is Kyle Tucker's replacement in 2 years. Yes.
I'm convinced Tucker won't be here. Is that the replacement for a right fielder?
Who else would it be? Now, he didn't have a very good arm in right. He's probably more of a left fielder because his arm stinks. People get so mad at me whenever I say that on Twitter. Oh, what do you mean his arm stinks? Didn't you see that play that he threw out the runner at second? Yeah, I saw him one hop it from a 315-foot Crawford box to second base. The dude does not have a very strong arm. Is it accurate? Did he play it well off the wall? Yes and yes. But he doesn't have a cannon. Maybe that prevents him from being the right fielder. He's probably the left fielder, though.
Yeah.
And then I think the Astros hope that Jacob Melton's their either center. Well, if Myers is still the guy, Melton's probably the right fielder.
Yeah. Because Yordan's just your full-time DH.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a comp for Loperfido. The other one that popped into my head when you said power, but I think he has the possibility of having, with longevity, a better career, but an Aaron Hicks type that has big time home run pop. That's a good athlete, good outfielder.
But yeah, remember what we were saying, Gallo early? He just hasn't done that. Like, his minor league numbers, like, scream Gallo. Like, low average, bunch of home runs, strikes
Gallo
out a lot.
Gallo has a cannon, and he was better than people gave him credit for.
Yeah, he played some center field.
Yeah.
I mean, Gallo could play a little bit of center field, better athlete. And Loperfido can run, too. what Loperfido's done in his few at-bats in the big leagues don't really add up to his at-bats in the minor leagues, and I think that that's going to average its way out. 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. Todd Kalas will be joining us at the bottom of the hour from the Bay Area. He'll be joining us at 3:30. He's got to get on the team bus, so he's joining us a little bit early today. Stephon Diggs, we always talk about him. Is he on the decline? Someone went with a deep dive on Stephon Diggs. What did they learn, and what do we learn because of it? Who said it at 4:30? And then also, all the mean things you say to us to wrap up the show. But coming up next, carry on with the conversation. What is your favorite part of this Astros team so far, 50 games through the year? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
TK, the voice of the Astros on the shin, he'll be joining us in 10 minutes. 713-780-ESPN. What's your favorite part of the Astros team through 50 games? Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Melvin, you're in the hive with the Bees. What's up, Melvin?
Yeah, I guess my favorite part would be, you know, Kyle Tucker playing like he's playing. But I also worry, like, would the Astros trade Joe Loop like they did for Kendall Graveman if they're in contention?
Interesting question.
Trade Joey Loperfido?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Melvin's asking.
I don't think so. I think that, again, I mentioned the fact that they don't have the deepest farm system out there. And, you know, they've got a guy that's now come up through their system that they've seen good things from. I don't think that they're going to trade him off for a rental or a piece that can help you maybe this year, the next year, or a veteran-type player. I think there might be other guys that you might try and do something with. You know, depending on for one, whatever Chaz McCormick does and where he is and where the rest of your outfield states because of Joey Loperfido, it may give you some flexibility to trade a guy like Chaz. But I don't think I don't foresee them trading or even kind of dangling out there Loperfido.
No, I think Loperfido is part of their future plans. Whether and it's probably in left field. Maybe I don't see it in center field. It might be first base. It might be first base after this year. Give them or it might be first base in a month and a half. So I think he could be the first baseman. I think he could be the left fielder. I think he's part of their plans. Corey Lee was tradable last year because they felt he was their backup catcher of the future. They feel like Yiner Diaz is the future at the catcher position for the Houston Astros. You know, whether that's right or wrong, you know, I could see that eventually moving to first base, less likely now because they traded Corey Lee, but they felt like they had a surplus of young catchers. I don't feel like they think that way with corner outfielders, especially with Kyle Tucker looming. So I would say no, because Loperfido is part of their future plans, and I don't think that they viewed Corey Lee as part of their future plans. 713-780-ESPN, back out to the HR&P listener line. Tyler, you're in the hive with the Bees. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, man?
Hey, so I just wanted to touch base with you guys and see what you guys thought about. My favorite part was the people that you don't typically think would be contributors as far as, you know, Jeremy Pena, yeah, he was good in the playoffs, but you weren't expecting him to hit over 300 through the first 50 games. Mauricio Dubon hitting over 300. Altuve and Tucker have done decent, I think. Altuve's kind of fallen off lately, but to get contribution from those players as opposed to your typical Altuve, Tucker, Bregman, Yordan, I think it's a good thing to get contribution out of those essentially utility or role players as opposed to your big stars right now, because I believe that they'll be kicking it in gear at some point, whether they get to the playoffs or later in the year when it really matters. I think that those big-time players will step up, and as long as those utility players and role players are contributing, I think we can tie it together.
Appreciate the call, Tyler. Yeah, the lineup's deep. Like, there's a reason that this Astros lineup is, I haven't looked at it in the last couple of days, but they led the league in batting average. They led the league in hits. They were like top two, top three in OPS. Their runs per game were not very good early. I think it was more hitting with runners in scoring position than it was lineup construction. It's now in the top four, top five after a slow start in terms of runs. This lineup is deep, and it has a chance to be way better because, like he said, Tyler did, Altuve, who's always been a bit streaky, he's kind of in the, I wouldn't say that he's slumping, but he's certainly not as hot as he was at the start of the year. Yordan's not going to be where he's at. This, I don't want to say he's slumping either, but he's not hitting for the power that we normally expect from Yordan Alvarez. And now your bottom of the order guys, you know, Myers is your bottom of the order guy. He's hitting over 300. Yiner Diaz, who I think is going to hit better than he currently is, bottom of the order. Mauricio Dubon, whenever he plays, bottom of the order. Chaz McCormick, you know, we have fun with Chaz McCormick, but Chaz McCormick's a good offensive player when he's hitting in the bottom three of the lineup. So this lineup is deep.
Yeah, no, look, and if you get anything at all that kind of upgrades what you get in the corner infield positions, then you know that they have the potential still to get better, to have more pop, to be more productive. The runners in scoring position has been a massive problem the entire season, but when you look at it, the fact that, you know, you've got, I would honestly say that Yordan and Altuve, I think Yordan definitely is slumping. He's starting to come out of it, but there's no doubt he's been in a slump. And yes, he still has some home run numbers.
I mean, he's got a 796 OPS.
But his average has gone way down.
265. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah, but
like,
normally for him, you
for
expect,
Yordan
yes.
standards, it's not good. Like, compared to Major League Baseball average, it's right. above no. average. Yeah, he's still an above average player relative to the average big leaguer.
Right. To our expectations from what we've seen and we've gotten to know of both Altuve and Yordan, Altuve dipped under 300. He's normally a 300-plus hitter, we know, as well as all the other intangibles and the power and the thing he brings to the table. Yordan the same way. I expect him to be hovering more, you know, 20 points higher at least than where he's hitting right now from an average perspective. And he went through a hell of a drought before he hit a home run where he started the season getting some good home run balls. So they can get better. The corner infielders can get better. And with that, the entire offense can be a lot better. And they have been the best, by average, the best hitting team in baseball. It's just, you can't put your finger on it and say, well, it's because, what's the reason then that they're not hitting with runners in scoring position? It's like the batter's eye thing. It's hard to really put your finger on it, but you expect that it's going to get better if they just keep hitting the way they're hitting for average.
Yeah, I think it has gotten better like over the last 2.5 weeks, too. Like, there's a reason their runs have climbed relative to the rest of baseball. It's because it's starting to come around. It's just such a bad taste in our mouths that it hasn't fully left. 713-780-ESPN. One more call on this. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Kyle, you're in the high with the bees. Yo.
Hey, my question is, I was kind of wondering, do you think, is there any chance, if Kyle Tucker continues to go off like he's been going off this entire year, that there's any chance after next year that Jim Crane will do something, maybe trade away a couple guys, open up a little cap room, and bring this guy back? Because he is Mr. Astro next to Altuve right now, right?
Yeah, he's their best player right now. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. My answer is no. Now, the Astros do have some money coming off the books. Alex Bregman's coming off the books. Justin Verlander is going to be here this year, next year. If he hits the vesting option, it looks like he's going to. So he comes off the books in 25. Presley comes off the books in 25. So, I mean, money is opening up. But do you want to spend 100% of that money on Kyle Tucker and then you're filling out the rest of your roster on, you know, with prospects, young players? Rafael Montero's coming off the books. Jose Abreu's coming off the books. So there is money. Framber Valdez is coming off the books. So there is money out there that is coming off the books that you can make it happen. You could make it, like, it's doable, but it's going to have to be a long-term deal, which Jim Crane has never been very willing to do. And then you're also going to have to readjust how you're building the rest of your roster. You're not going to be nearly as deep as you have been in the past. And then you had the Steinbrenner kid, I forget his first name, George Steinbrenner's son, who's the owner of the Yankees
Hal.
Now. I think it is Hal. I don't know if it's Hal. There's one that like owns it, and there's one that like runs it.
I think Hal is the guy that kind of does the day-to-day.
Maybe it was Hal. I don't remember which one it was. I take your word for it. He said that their payroll right now is not sustainable to make money. Like, and that's a Steinbrenner saying that. How do we think Jim Crane feels about it? Now, I think that you can make it happen from an AAV perspective. I don't think that Crane's going to want to do the long-term deal and the huge financial commitment because, quite frankly, he's going to make north of $300 million.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I've said no all along, and I'll continue to say no, that I don't think there's a chance. And it's simply because of the fact that Kyle Tucker and his agent are not going to be what Yordan Alvarez and his agent were and did for the Houston Astros. They're not going to give you a sweetheart deal. They're not going to give you bargains. And I think that they know this is his time. And unlike a situation with Alex Bregman where he bet on himself and it's not going very well at all, Kyle Tucker right now is showing you that he is betting on himself and it is going to pay off. And when it's payoff time, they are going to be looking for that deal that kind of is the deal of a lifetime, that it wraps him up for years and it wraps him up for dollars. And it's going to be a long-term big money deal, which is exactly what the Astros have shown us that they don't want and are not willing to do. So I think that you have to enjoy the Kyle Tucker years that are left and find out and see how it's all going to play out. If Kyle Tucker decides, hey, I don't want to play in a big city, a mass media market. I don't want to get into all that extra. I like it here in Houston. It'll be a hell of a negotiation because he's going to be looking for at least 6 years and probably two or three more than that at, like you said, around $300 million or more. And no matter who comes off the books, even if you throw in Graveman, Montero, all these other guys, all these other contracts, you have to rebuild the rest of your roster with the guys you're losing as well as pay a guy that you just don't know what the return on investment on the second half of that deal is going to be. And you, yes, you can project and you can assume. But most of those don't end well, and that just is another reason why it doesn't seem like the Astros are willing to do those deals.
Yeah, I'd be stunned. 713-780-ESPN. We're going to step aside for a moment. When we come back, the voice of the Astros, Todd Kalas of the Shin, joins us live from Oakland. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line, being joined by the voice of the Astros, Todd Kalas. Our conversation presented by Texas Star Grill Shop, Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceyCars.com. TK, thanks for taking a few minutes. I know you got the series opener against Oakland. We didn't have a chance to talk last week, and I wanted to talk about you being down on the field, sidelines with Julia being up in the booth. Why was your picture so blurry?
Yeah, that's a good question. My camera's got a little crack on the phone lens, and I think just the lighting at the stadium, those two things did not blend well. So, yeah, the pictures were definitely poor quality.
How cool of a night was that, though, in all sincerity?
That was really cool. Julia did great, and I hadn't done that in a while, the whole sideline thing. That's what I used to do pre- and post-game and sideline with Tampa Bay. So it's kind of cool to go back to what I did for 19 years with the Rays, and I had a lot of fun with it. And if they decide to do it again in the future, I'm all for it.
TK, I got to ask this because both Jeremy and I have done our share of games and worked with teams in season. But when you get into it, you get into it, and you're in an everyday mode. And the fact that I've always been curious, and I've talked to Blummer about this in the past too, how you respond and how you like or dislike the fact that you're in the season and then you have these mandatory where you got to take time off during the season when you have your time in the off season to kind of vacation. Is that difficult or do you look forward to it?
I used to not look forward to it at all because I was a guy that thought you had to do all 162. That was kind of part of the MO of being a broadcaster on a regular basis, is you did all every game. And I did that my first few years in the minors, obviously, as well. But I think I've gotten to the point now where I do appreciate the time. It's a long season, and we're there a lot earlier and a lot later than we've ever been before. So, you know, I'm fine with a few days off here and there. I don't want to have, you know, more than 10 days off in a season, but if they want to give me 5 to 8, then I'm good with that.
But do you take time off, or are you still at the games or watching the games? Because I think that's what I would do.
I'm peaking at times. It depends on what's going on with my wife and I, with our plans, but I'm definitely looking in at times, and I'm DVRing games, so the extra inning walk-off the other day, I wanted to make sure I watched that and saw Jeremy Payne do his thing. But yeah, I'm putting all the games in my scorebook. So there is definitely work involved, even though I'm technically off.
Todd Kallas joining us on the HR&P guest line from Oakland. You know, we've kicked this around a few times with Kyle Tucker on the heater that he is on, the player that he has become, leads baseball in homers, second in OPS, and we've talked about where he is relative to the rest of the game. Kyle Tucker is a top what player? Is it 5? Is it 10? Is it 25? Where do you think he stacks up with the best hitters in baseball?
American League, I would go top 3 right now. In the major leagues, I don't see the National League as much, but I would go somewhere in the top 6 or 7. Yeah, he's really good. I mean, he's getting better, too. That's the thing. Every year, you can see improvement. The strike zone discipline is off the charts this year. He's swinging at strikes. He's barreling strikes. He's got the potential to be an MVP, and if you're an MVP, then you're top 1. But I'll say top 3 for now and maybe top 1 by the end of the year.
TK, we know it's been an ongoing storyline, the Abreu story. We know that he got his work in. He did his work in Florida. And then we had heard Dana kind of indicate he might be on this road trip. Now we know he's playing tonight in Sugar Land. And we've gone back and forth on what is the right scenario on when you bring him back. I mean, I thought that maybe he had success last year in Oakland. He had that sprint around the bases, slide into the dugout moment. Their pitching staff isn't what Seattle's is. I'm curious, is it better on the at home or on the road, and when, and who do you bring him back against?
Yeah, I'm curious to talk to Joe Espada about that today, because I didn't see him, obviously, during that last series against the Angels when a lot of that news was coming out about Jose Abreu. I don't think the best team for him to come back is the Seattle Mariners. They have 5 right-handed starters, and other than Logan Gilbert, they have those other 3 get, you know, those other 4 get righties out pretty well. Logan Gilbert's kind of neutral. It's not like he doesn't get righties out. He just happens to get lefties out at a little bit better clip. So I don't know who you match him up against. I mean, do you want him to come back against Bryce Miller or George Kirby or Luis Castillo or even Gilbert maybe, I guess. But, yeah, I'm curious about the timing, because the A's would have been a softer landing spot, you would think. But I do think he needed to see Double A and Triple A pitching. So I don't think it was right for him to go from the Florida Complex League straight up to the big league. I think he needed to get a little bit of competition along the way. So to go about answering your question, I don't think the timing is great for him to be activated for Seattle, but it seems like that's the trend right now. Who am I to argue? It looks like it had it all planned out.
The rotation is going to be interesting, too, with Ronel Blanco serving his suspension, comes back on Sunday. Spencer Arrighetti gets the start tomorrow. Hunter Brown's been pretty good since adding the sinker, was really good in his last start. What do you think the rotation looks like once these guys go through a turn with everybody back?
I think it's going to be between Spencer Arrighetti and Hunter Brown for that sixth spot, because they're coming back. I don't know if you can hear me. It's kind of getting in the head. Our team is going to come back in the next week or two, so that'll mean those 2 guys will fight it over the 6th spot, and then maybe they're both not in the rotation by the time they go down to 5 if their team comes back and is effective. So, I for sure now Blackwell's going to stay in there. Obviously, Javier and Verlander and Cromer are going to stay in there, and then probably 1 or 2 of those other 3. But I think Hunter and Spencer, this turnaround, are kind of fighting for that spot in the rotation.
TK, I know that, again, Alex Bregman, we talk about him throughout the year, kind of like Abreu back and forth, and he struggled since he's been put back into the cleanup position and up in the lineup. He actually started to flourish and show signs of coming out of it in the 6 hole. I've said to start this road trip, if it's me personally, I would like to see him back in the 6 hole just because of the fact that he had success there. He seemed to kind of relax there. He struggled in the 4 hole. He struggled at the end of this homestand. Your thoughts on possibly moving him back down?
I think Joe's going to let him stay there for a little while. You don't want to move guys back and forth too much. Beginning of the homestand, great. End of the homestand, not so great. But you don't want to be like too reactionary so that every 3 or 4 days he has to wonder where he's sitting in the lineup. So I think he's going to give him a little more time in that 4th spot. If things continue to trend negatively, then Joe's obviously moving down to 4 and was not afraid to move him down again. But for now, I'm good with, you know, Bregman staying in the 4th spot. At least through this series, we'll see where things are after that.
TK, enjoy the roadie. Call some winners.
Let's hope so. Big series. I mean, a big road trip, at least. The series in Oakland, hopefully gets them ready for Seattle. That's going to be a big series up in the Northwest.
All right, have a good call. Todd Kalish joining us on the HR&P guest line. Our conversation is presented by Texas Star Grill Shop, Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. What is a fair, realistic expectation for the Texans this year? 713-780-3776. What is fair, realistic for the Texans this season? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What are realistic expectations for the Texans this season? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. 0492. He says 13-3. This texter says Presley's 2025 14 million option. Vest with 50 appearances this year. Don't think he's coming off the books. He comes off the books after 25. Like, we were talking about the contracts come off the books before Kyle Tucker comes off the books. Because Tucker, Presley, Fromber, all in that sit. Montero, Abreu, all come off on the same year. So, yeah, Presley's going to be back next year unless he gets hurt. But he comes off the books after 2025, which is when Kyle Tucker comes off the books. So that's free money for, you know, Kyle Tucker if you wanted to use it that way. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is fair, realistic expectations for the Houston Texans? Because you had a lot of people say, you know, Super Bowl. I haven't heard anybody say Super Bowl or bust. Just like you're a Super Bowl contender, which isn't the same as Super Bowl or bust. But what do you think is a fair, realistic expectation for the Houston Texans in 2024?
I think it's a fair expectation to assume this team is going to make the playoffs. I think that this team is a playoff team. This team is, whether they win the division or not, I think is really kind of dependent on the fact that they have got a tough schedule. But I expect them to win double-digit games. I expect them to get into the playoffs. I expect them to be a tough out and be a competitive football team. If I'm honest, I think they're in and around 10-7 to me. But I don't think that's a slap in the face to them. That's more of the fact that you look at those final three of the final four games. You look at the time in between those final games. You look at the fact that they're playing a lot tougher schedule than they were a year ago. They have improved a great deal, but that doesn't mean that there's any cakewalks, that there's a whole lot of teams you can take advantage of, except for maybe Tennessee in your division. So I would expect that this team has the ability to go at least as far as they did a year ago and make the playoffs again and be in the race to win the division again and be a playoff team no matter what.
Yeah, I think it's fair to have playoff expectations. I would be okay even if they don't win the division and make the playoffs. Like, if you go 10-7 and the Colts go 11-6 and you're one of the wild cards, I'm okay with that. I really don't think that it's not Super Bowl or bust in year two of C.J. Stroud. Poncho says sophomore jinx. You know, that's happened in sports. Hopefully it doesn't happen with C.J. Stroud. I also think the AFC is really stinking good. Like, you can just pull it right off the rip. You got Kansas City and Baltimore, who I think are better teams than the Houston Texans are. And then there's other teams that have a chance to be really good. I think Buffalo has a chance to be really good. I think Miami has a chance to be really good-ish. I kind of hesitate because of Tua. Other teams in the AFC North, like a Cincinnati, if they're healthy, Cincinnati can be one of those upper echelon teams. Really know on Pittsburgh, Cleveland, unless Deshaun Watson goes bonkers. And then anybody else in the West outside of Kansas City, I can't see. I think the expectations are conference round of the AFC. And I know that's where you were last year. You were not the conference round, the divisional round. That's where you were last year. You won a wild card game, and then you lost in the divisional round to Baltimore. If you get to the divisional round again, I think that's an okay place to be for the Houston Texans this year, year two of D'Amico, year two of C.J. Stroud, because you still have Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. You still have Pat Mahomes in Kansas City. And you probably are going to have them for a very long time. But if you fall short of the AFC Conference Championship game because you get beat by Pat Mahomes or because you get beat by Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, I don't think that that's falling short of expectations.
No, and it shouldn't be. I mean, you look at from top to bottom when we went over the schedule, and then you start just looking at the quarterback on the other side of the line for a lot of those games, and you're not talking about taking Atlanta on and taking Carolina in the first year of Bryce Young and taking on the second and third string quarterbacks of a team like the Jets. You're talking about Aaron Rodgers when you're talking about the Jets this year. You're talking about teams where, yes, in Minnesota, it's the difference between J.J. McCarthy and Sam Darnold. But at the same time, you don't have to, you're not able to stack and rack teams and quarterbacks that you should be able to beat. If the Jets are a totally different team if Rodgers stays healthy, no matter where he is in his career. When you look at taking on the guys that you're taking on, that in itself makes it a bigger challenge with the teams that are on your schedule than what you played a year ago.
Yeah, I felt like I was missing a team, and the Jets are the team that's kind of my dark horse if Rodgers can stay healthy, because that defense is legit, and they have weapons. Like they have Breece Hall. They have Garrett Wilson. They invested in their offensive line. I think that's a team that could be a surprise for the AFC. 713-780-ESPN. What's a fair, realistic expectation for the Houston Texans in 2024 in year two of C.J. Stroud? And even if they, like, I think the Texans are a better team than they were a year ago. They've added pieces. I think they've upgraded in a bunch of different areas. Like, I think that Mixon's a slight upgrade over Singletary. Obviously, you added Stephon Diggs. If you can stay healthy on the offensive line, your offensive line is an upgrade. I think their linebackers are better because Azeez Al-Shaair is better than, like, Denzel Perryman or Blake Cashman. I like Hunter more than I like Grenard, even though he's older. The interior of the defensive line, you know, maybe that's a wash. Collins Rankin's gone, fully settled in. How much does Autry play three tech? How much does he play outside? That's kind of up in the air. Akuda Henderson versus Steven Nelson, like, I think you're probably hoping that's a wash. Throw Lassiter in there, and then you still have the same safeties. But also the maturation of the young players into their second year. You know, C.J. Stroud should be better in year two. Will Anderson should be better in year two. Jalen Petrie, second year in D'Amico's system, should be better. Stingley, he was really stinking good last year. If he just gives you what he was last year, that's going to be really stinking good. But other young players like Tank Dell, like, stay healthy. Nico Collins, stack a second year. So I think that the Texans could be, like, still better than they were a year ago, but finish with the same record and go to the same point that they were in the playoffs last year.
Is it safe to say that it would, no matter what we talk about the schedule, the quarterbacks, and everything, the disappointment would be if they didn't make the playoffs?
That would be falling. I think that's the only falling short of expectations. Now, if you win the division and say you have home field advantage in the wild card round, and like you're the 2 or 3 seed, and you get beat by that, you know, second or last wild card, and they hammer you at home or something like that, then that would be disappointing.
I think the only way that I could say that this would be a disappointing season is if they suffer some kind of injury or injuries that kind of fall in with the fact that they don't make the playoffs. We know that Cincinnati...
Yeah, but the injuries would give you an excuse. Like, if Stroud got hurt in week three, like, okay, well, all expectations are gone.
Yeah, I think it would be disappointing if they didn't make the playoffs without a significant injury or injuries.
Yeah.
I think that if they had injuries and missed the playoffs, it would still be disappointing because of the high we've been on since they did what I didn't think that they were capable of doing this soon and all that they did a year ago. But I think when you factor it in, yes, the injuries would allow you kind of a soft landing spot to say, hey, there's excuses built in. If they just don't make the playoffs with as quickly as they were able to press the fast forward button and get this franchise back to winning consistently, I think that would be disappointing.
Yeah, that'd be very disappointing. In a scenario where they make the playoffs, though, I think can still be disappointing, but I think it comes in the wild card round. If you're a heavy favorite at home in the wild card round because you're a 2 or 3 seed and you lose to the second or third wild card, you get beat by 20 at home, that's going to be falling short of expectations. I think the expectations of the divisional round is getting back to the divisional round. If you fall short of where you were last year with all of the things that you've thought you've improved on, and in the second year of D'Amico, another year for the young players, if you fall short of the divisional round, I think that's falling short of expectation. Yeah. I would set my expectations as divisional round.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, to start it, I think that to set the bar fairly, the expectation is you do what you did a year ago. You win a game in the first round, and you're competitive in the second round of the playoffs. I think that it is fool's gold, and it's a very scary proposition for the fans out there that have a Super Bowl or bust. Or even,
I haven't seen that, though. Have you seen that?
I've seen
contendership, but I haven't seen Super Bowl or bust.
But almost expectations are AFC Championship game or Super Bowl, and I think that those are too lofty. I think that maybe, you know, we're a year away from that. But I think that to think that this team... have expectations for this team to be AFC Championship or Super Bowl, you're forgetting who you have on the schedule and who you have in your way in the AFC, because I think that it's a daunting task because people forget because they got bounced. They didn't get to the Super Bowl, but the Ravens are a one seed for the regular season. The Ravens were a damn good football team in the regular season, and they fell short. You still have Patrick Mahomes all day, every day in Kansas City, no matter who his supporting cast is. He's capable. And now you got a healthy or expected to be healthy Joe Burrow with his full complement of receivers back, to where that's another storyline in itself that you weren't expecting a year ago because of all the injuries. Now you pencil him in and go, oh, by the way, this is a team that's been capable of beating Kansas City. They're damn good, too.
Yeah, it's hard to be disappointed if you lose to one of those quarterbacks. King of Twitch says 9-8. Is that fair? I think 9-8 is fair. I have the Texans going 10-7. So 9-8 is in play. Now, if you go 9-8, is it falling short of expectations? Yeah. Yeah, it is falling short of expectation. But I do think that 9-8 is in play. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Do you see this petition to keep the deep still Thunder Brass? You know, the Texans have had a band.
Yeah.
And the Texans are dropping the brass part of the band, but they're keeping the drum line. And they've started a petition to keep the deep still Thunder Bass. What would it take for you, not bass, brass, what would it take for you to sign the petition to keep the deep still Thunder Brass?
There's nothing that's going to tell
you. What do you have against bands? What do you have against band members?
They're great in college. They're fantastic in high school. I have no need to have a band at an NFL game blasting away, whether it's halftimes or stoppages in play and timeouts and things like that. I know that they used to put them all right there down on the field, right next to the bench.
Yeah.
And then eventually they realized they could sell those for a lot more money, and suddenly the band wasn't there anymore, but they weren't done.
They weren't banned?
No. Yeah, band, yeah.
Where did they even put the band? I haven't seen the band in a decade.
I didn't
even know they still had a band.
I think that they bring them out now. I think that they assemble underneath. And then they come out for like a timeout or a halftime or whatever. But it used to be that they used to have, and I think they put them it started out next to the home bench.
Yeah.
And then the Texans got annoyed by it because they were still loud. So they put them on the field in like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Next to the visiting bench.
Yeah, I remember whenever they were there, like on the field-ish, like kind of tucked away in that corner. But I didn't, like, once they took them away from those seats, I didn't even realize they kept the band together. It sounds like you're bandist, which I don't know how I feel about it. You know what's weird about, though, an NFL team having a band? And like in high school, like there are students. There are students that are in the band. In college, there are students that are in the band. A professional team having a band, like I'm looking at a picture of them right now. They're grown adults. Like this guy's 55 years old getting down playing the drum. Yeah. Although they are keeping the drum line. I don't know anything about this.
I think not maybe to the level of the cheerleader tryouts. I believe that there's like auditions and that there's multiple rounds of auditioning to be a part of the Texans band.
At least that was
in the past.
Well, not anymore because they're getting rid of them. They're getting rid of them unless this petition to keep the Deep Still Thunder Brass comes to fruition. But they're keeping the drum line. They're just getting rid of everything else. What would you call that? What instruments are those? I was never in band or orchestra. I don't have a musical bone in my body.
Which instruments?
Maybe. Wind instruments?
Oh, definitely.
Would that be it? Percussion, maybe?
Well, the percussion is the drum.
That's the drum?
Yeah, the drum line.
I have no idea.
And xylophone, I think, gets roped into percussion, but that's percussion. Yeah, and the woodwinds would be your clarinets and such.
And
the horn section would obviously.
You wouldn't sign this.
I don't like it. It's annoying to me because it's a noise that's not conducive to watching NFL football to me.
I would sign it for $50. At Jeremy,
you could be bribed.
At Jeremy Dash, I could be bought. I have a price. Everybody's got a price for the $1 million man. At Jeremy Dash Branham on Venmo. If you send me $50, I will sign the petition to keep the Deep Still Thunder Brass. That's at Jeremy Dash Branham on Venmo. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Stephon Diggs on the decline. What we might have learned, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, a word for Allstate Siding and Windows. You can check out everything they do and all they can do for you at AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com. But what I need to tell you is that AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com are the best in the business at protecting your number one investment. And we all know that that's, for most of us, your house. And you know that there's all kinds of quirky weather conditions here in Houston. It's about to get triple digits and get super hot. We know that we have those occasional times when it gets super cold for Houston, and it can mess with a lot of different things with your thermostat and with the grid and everything else. And then, of course, with your windows as well as your siding, the fact is they can create an outer protective shell. And the greatest thing is they can lower your energy bills to up to 40%. That's fantastic. But like, I just had the windows put in my house, and I'm telling you, the overall curb appeal and appearance of the house goes way up with when you put new windows on the house. But the important thing is they're going to do a great job of sealing in the whatever you're trying to do, your air conditioner or your heater on the inside, and protect you from the elements on the outside. And they are going to be durable. They're going to be able to sustain the hurricane-type conditions, but they're going to allow you to protect your house in a better fashion. And the people at Allstate Windows and Siding, they're the experts in their field. Mary and her brothers and the family, they have kept it a family operation for almost 50 years, and they take care of everything for you. So much so that if you reach out to them, they're going to come to you and give you a free, no-obligation quote, and tell you how they can help you too, because that's the way they do business. You call them, they come out, they say, what are you interested in? Well, if you say either one or the other, they'll get right to it. If you say, I might be interested in both, tell me how you guys can help me, they'll lay it all out for you right there. They'll lay it out how you can, first of all, they'll tell you that you can save 30% off a window deal right now, $2,500 off a complete siding job. And then they'll go and basically tell you the products that they offer and how those products can be beneficial to you based on your individual and personal situation. Start the process today. All you got to do is, like I said, you can go to the website, allstatesidingandwindows.com, or just call them, 832-204-1936. 832-204-1936. Set up that free home estimate. Let them come out and tell you how they can help you too, and then see if it might be right for you as well. It was right for me. I could not be happier with the windows that I had put in. Check them out today, allstatewindowsandsiding.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.